Okay, this is Side 2 of Session 25, January 1st, 2007. And we're continuing our discussion of the relevance of Thompson to the 90s and his position in my book, why he's in the computer quadrant on my chart. And I was just going to explain to Scott that if William Irwin Thompson actually ran for presidency in 92 and became the president, he would be moving into a literate industrial institution known as the White House, which is an anemic, weak-looking institution coming out of the 18th and 19th century compared to all the other media zones that one would have to confront in the 90s. And there is not that much involvement in the White House image. They say that 50% of the population doesn't even vote. The point is that whatever idea you have that could be implemented in the White House, the way the autonomous digital technology of the 80s and early 90s is sneaking up through Walkmans and cell phones and VCRs and voicemail and personal computers, the centralized image and tradition of the White House becomes anemic in relation to the decentralized effect of all these autonomizing media, autonomizing of the digital effect as opposed to the one-way analog effect. People can begin to yell back at the central news agencies, ABC, CBS, and NBC. So what rises in the late 80s and early 90s at the same time as Clinton is talk radio. It's retrieved from the 60s, and it's considered angry talk radio. And the point is everybody is dissatisfied with the image coming out of the White House, maybe with George Bush when he said, "Read my lips," and then definitely when Clinton comes in, that was a controversial image, and a lot of people bashed on that. And you will see, as the White House was in an embattled state as an image for 8 years, right? Mm-hmm. Clinton went through one scandal after another, nothing but scandals. Now, Hillary Clinton said that was a right-wing conspiracy led by Richard Mellon Scaife and the American Spectator and all that stuff. But the point was that the abuse was already happening, whether orchestrated by rich Republicans on the content Washington bureaucratic level, it was able to be developed and satirized by the nature of the Jerry Springer world that sprung up in the early 90s. Okay, so that what are people going to talk about when they have their cable TV shows and satellite shows and all these different... it was called the cable market. You know, Fox TV rose up on that. What are they going to talk about? They're going to talk about centralized imagery and the White House. And that becomes a dominant meme. And that is what Arthur Kroger calls the abuse value that the major centralized institutions, the one-way Big Brother institutions, were subjected to. Now, that whole matrix of media effects, digital media effects, Thompson does not foresee in the paragraph we read.
Mm-hmm.
He thinks it's important enough to get an image in there that is rational and ecologically sensible. That's referring to managing first nature or the chemical body, but since you have the TV body and chip body swirling into the mix, it's in a lot more chaotic situation by 1992.
So in a way, he doesn't really fulfill his role as being in the computer quadrant. It's more of a Kroger role.
Okay, now, we were talking a little while ago about the word computer.
Right.
And that when people say the computer revolution came in with the Internet, it's actually not just the old computer, it's a new kind of two-way computer, but that's made possible due to fiber optics and satellite and all the other infrastructure of technology that makes wideband or deep band or broadband communication possible and faster. You think back to 95, the slow level of dial-up, right?
Mm-hmm.
Many people were frustrated by computers. They had to work on the computers, but it was frustrating. But once that got bypassed by DSL or whatever you call the post-dial-up thing, things happened real fast by the late 90s. The service became better. It's not just the old clunky computer. What people call computer, I call Android meme, which is convergence and fractionalization of all those previous environments. So when I'm radio, TV, computer, satellite, plus all the cable optics and and whatever else goes into making the environment we have today. I'm saying that Thompson represents, to the degree he represents anything, the meme of 1918 to 1945.
Mm-hmm.
But it is one meme among many. And so my chart shows the interplay of these historical memes that can be symbolized by certain technologies that are interplaying and melting and dissolving in the actual Android meme conditions of the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to specify what I mean by computer. And the reason I put Thompson as his complementary sub-medium, the printed book, is that the computer generally, in the 40s and 50s, was the digitizing, in the technical meaning of the term, of visual information. Speeded up the accounting reality, right? Accounting books.
Right.
It was originally done for managing visual printed material. So that's why I call the book effect is symbolized by Thompson, and as we said months ago, that he is presenting a book narrative of the history of consciousness in his writings. It's a linear chronology of different phases, right?
Right.
Whereas Finnegan's Wake is more, the image of a page in Finnegan's Wake is more apt to the 90s and now because it doesn't make a linear step-by-step effect of the chronology of our evolution of technology and consciousness, but makes it simultaneous and makes it retrieve and progress and flip and obsolete and extend all at once.
Right.
There's no step-by-step.
Right. So Finnegan's Wake represents chaos dynamics, wouldn't you say?
Yes, and
but,
more.
But then, and Thompson talks about the fact that we're in the age of the chaos dynamics.
Yes. And he only belatedly, under my reacquainting him with the Finnegan's Wake roots of McLuhan, did he start talking about the Wake again in the 90s.
Yeah, he probably was thinking it in the old Joseph Campbell terms.
That's right. That's what he used to think it was. Now, the image in my chart of the Android meme, which this book is an extension of the chart, or the chart's an extension of the book, is the interplay of the LaRouche quadrant, the McLuhan quadrant, the Thompson quadrant, the Croker quadrant, the Dobbs quadrant, are all intertwined as quark particles in the 90s. You know what I mean? They almost have no substance.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what you have to remember in terms of what we're looking at in the role of each figure.
Mm-hmm.
McLuhan, Thompson, and remember, they're melted with the medium that's the real actor of the 20th century, radio, TV, computer, satellite.
Right.
The Thompson, LaRouche, Croker, and McLuhan are just the anthropomorphic projections in there.
Right. Now, since Clinton was kind of a...
Yeah, let's deal with your statement that he rode in on the information highway.
Yeah, before we do that, I just wanted to make, just for the sake of contrast, because people saw Clinton as being a retrieval of Kennedy. Now, Kennedy was assassinated because he was charismatic on the new media, the television,
right,
and it threatened the status quo.
Right.
So now, with Clinton being a resonant, an octave of Kennedy, well, I don't know. Could we say that the office of the presidency was being sort of assassinated for similar reasons?
Yes, the image of the White House was assassinated not by a hardware bullet, but by software autonomous media that swirled around the White House.
Mm-hmm.
Talk radio, cell phones, and video, private video recorders. It's the editing of media imagery that any citizen could do by the time of the Clinton administration. So, yes, the abuse value represented by Kennedy being assassinated.
Of course, Kennedy, people believe, was assassinated more or less by the mafia and by conspiratorial military thinking and so on.
Right, well, that was the reaction of the establishment to the his TV effect.
Mm-hmm.
They were made paranoid by the TV effect.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying he was assassinated by TV, but Kennedy, his success as a TV image did lead to him being assassinated.
Right.
So then the next assassination is LBJ has to step down. The next one is Watergate. The next one is Carter and the Khomeini fiasco.
Mm.
Okay? Then Reagan gets Iran-Contra. Then Bush says, read my lips and raises taxes. Every one of them their image, their term gets assassinated. So Clinton's going, the White House will get assassinated, the image of it,
mm-hmm.
and even more violently. It's just the Clinton era is extreme because there's nothing but constant assassination for 8 years
mm-hmm.
on all kinds of so-called bogus scandals.
Yeah, but in a way it reinforces the image of the White House because it's always in the news.
That's right. It becomes the center of the Android meme. So my chart shows it's called a decade dance. And so the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s are all in the Android meme of the 90s because it's retrieving all the previous decades. So that Clinton was a mixture of Truman, Eisenhower, Kennedy, Johnson, Nixon, Carter, Reagan, and George Bush, all mixed up, hyper-accelerated. Therefore, he had to be assassinated on all those retrieved levels constantly, and including his wife. Remember, his wife, the First Lady, gets assassinated even more. And that's just the hyper abuse that was always.
I remember that. What was she was because of the Whitewater thing?
Everything. I mean, she had to withdraw from being instrumental in 93, 94 by Gingrich. They had to remove her and create an image that she was not interfering with Bill's work at all, whereas she obviously was in 93, 94. That was part of the reaction that brought in the neocon revolution of Gingrich, was they didn't like the fact that a person who wasn't elected was influential in making policy, like a whole health care thing that she tried.
Mm-hmm.
So, but because everything was all mixed up and the boundaries were blurred, the wife did become part of the presidency. So there was a reaction to that, which the merger and blurring of forms between the First Lady and the President was epitomized by their relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so back to what were we talking about, the information highway. What's interesting is that Gore got abused because he said that he invented the Internet. Remember that one?
Well, I know that people say that he said that. Yeah. I never heard him say it. I can't believe he actually did say that, but he's been attributed.
People say people take the actual quote and say, no, he didn't say that. But that would be the pro-Gore faction. The anti-Gore says, he did say that. But neither is probably real, and probably he didn't say it. But the point is he said something close to it, and that's all you need
mm-hmm.
in the post-information society of the 90s. Now, Gore is the Internet guy, supposedly, and he's the one who implemented and encouraged that environment. Little did he know that the environment would create effects that his administration, or he and Clinton's era, really had to put up with. So they created a new environment that obsolesced the role of the White House, made it more vulnerable and fragile. And so you can't say that Clinton rode the information highway. What he did is he had a natural image of Slick Willie, of someone who could slip and slide, which was the actual experience of the Internet users in the 90s. So his image of Slick Willie and saying there is no is, and depends on the definition of is, any user of the slippery Finneganese of the Internet experience has that, what I call, quadriphenic feature.
Mm-hmm.
So that is how his image instinctively naturally rode and met the demands of the 90s. His image did not meet the demands of this present decade. He needed another image, and that would be someone who was not into communication at all. And that image showed up through George Bush.
Mm-hmm.
But we're getting ahead of ourselves. Let's go back to Thompson and how it relates to the computer. And so you see how I'm using computer multi-level, but keeping it basic, to make a larger point about what the Android meme is made up of,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
So we originally were saying, why is Thompson in the computer quadrant? I've attempted to explain that.
Right. Yeah, and the fact that that his quadrant merges not only the technology of the computer, but the astral body.
Yes.
Is interesting.
Right, and how he, because the computer brings in a externalization of the astral plane, having a thinker be able to include those memes of history from Buddhism and the occult and theosophy and maybe esoteric Christianity, but generally not considered Christian, the secret doctrines, you needed someone to talk about the media in those terms, which McLuhan as a Catholic couldn't do. So Thompson comes after Catholic McLuhan, and as the computer comes after, the computer environment comes after the TV environment, and with a book bias. McLuhan's era was enjoying the electric media of the 60s. All right? But as the baby boomers get into the 70s, they start being forced to write books, because that's essentially the American culture has the archetype of a writer or a professor. And many boomers get jobs in the information society, and they had to write books.
Well, books become content for the, they don't become content for the TV, but they do become content for the Internet. It's interesting, because they thought we were moving into a paperless society with the Internet, but I see Borders and these different retail bookstores are doing booming business.
Yes, and McLuhan wrote or said in the 60s that the TV station will discover books in the 30s, in their 30s and 40s, which would be the late 70s, 80s, and 90s, and that's what's happened. And so he predicted that when a medium is obsolete, it will expand. It will fill up.
Oh, yeah.
It will experience elephantiasis. And that's what happened. The old media becomes the content, while the real effects on people's lives, sensory, political, economic, ethical, and aesthetically, is molded by the new environment as an invisible ground. So as we moved into the digital age, which obsolesces books and makes books no longer constitutive, that was the word McLuhan used, and that the digital is the constitutive that affects people's lives directly, call it job outsourcing, call it corporate ratership, all the effects on the working life caused by, not books, but by the digital environment of the 80s and 90s, the old medium becomes a security blanket. And as the intensity of the new media gets more confusing and stressful, you need more security blankets. There, hence the growth of Borders and Barnes & Noble and these bookstores.
Yeah. You know, as we talk about digitalization causing the shipping of jobs overseas, of course, we're doing that from the egocentric point of view of America and the Western Hemisphere.
Americanocentric.
You know,
not necessarily egocentric, but Americanocentric.
Americanocentric, yeah. From a global perspective, this may be a good thing, even though it's frightening a lot of people who are losing their jobs in the Americano.
That's right. So the world is evolving. And so the centralized power structure of Big Brother, which was the American century, at least since World War II, that centralized image that America represented for investors and for political and espionage control melts away. And the melting away is the spreading of the fruits of American technology and Western technology to the whole world. So now we have the specter of China, where you have to go to get a job. Right?
Yeah.
So let's, with that in mind, let's see if the next quote by Thompson resonates with that, with what, anything we've
said. Well, you know, from what we just read, I think it might be worth just looking at the very first sentence here, which says, if one takes all of the five future transforms together, they form a pattern, a slight Aikido move that is necessary to transform the militarism of Reagan into a new popularist liberalism for a transformed Democratic Party in the 90s. What the hell is he talking about here? Now, first of all, what are the five future transforms?
They are charts in his book. They are themes. Effects of the TV environment, if I remember. I don't have the article right here. I have it in my files. But it is, remember, this is an excerpt from an essay. And he's talking about five major effects. And he, at that time, was talking about advocating the merger of the USSR and the United States of America around a space program.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, a combined Star Wars. Because this is a few years after 1983 Star Wars mandate. So he lays out all these trends that are going on by the middle 80s. And then they refer to the five future transformations that are going on. He's trying to show what the hidden ground of the present is in the 80s. That's where he's McLuhan-esque. and then he wants to adapt it to a bureaucratic takeover of the bureaucratic institution of the White House. So he said if one takes all of these five future transforms or trends together, they form a pattern or an advantage, a slight Aikido move that is necessary to transform the effect of the global theater of the first half of the 80s, the militarism of Reagan, into a new populist liberalism for a transformed Democratic Party in the 90s. Now, he's talking about changing the party, but there's going to be a huge populist liberalism in the technological effect of the dot-com revolution of the 90s, where everybody has access to their own media to work with.
Right.
With their personal computers. So, but he's still thinking in the printed book format of taking over an industrial bureaucracy, a bureaucracy formed by the printing press. So that's what he's referring to. But maybe I should read through the paragraph again in light of what we're saying before we go on to the next one.
Yeah.
We'll do the Bob spin through. Replay. Okay. We just did this paragraph. Scott read it. Now I'm going to redo it after we spend an hour discussing it. If one takes all of the five future transforms together, in other words, the five future trends of the middle 80s, they form a pattern, a slight Aikido move that is necessary to transform the militarism of Reagan into a new populist liberalism for a transformed Democratic Party in the 90s. If the Democratic Party remains the party of the industrial past, of labor unions and ethnic blocs, it will, like Mondale, become a fossil. So he's aware of the White House or the traditional political structure as part of the 19th century, right? And he's going to still try to hijack it. It's even him thinking of hijacking it is a product of the 80s and the autonomous user as the content. His whole plan here to hijack it, one could say is traditional politics, but he's doing this through a magazine essay, not through the Democratic Party. He's thinking of hijacking in some way surrounding the bureaucratic structure of the Democratic Party. So he says, and if the Democratic Party, so he's saying the Democratic Party's got to change, right? It's got to not be a Democratic Party. It's got to create a new image. So he's thinking in TV terms. What's your new image? So he says, and if the Democratic Party tries to become identical to Reagan's party, or image, and to woo the same constituency, it will only prove itself to be shallow, thoughtless, opportunistic, and completely lacking in credibility as well as power. Now, that is the main criticism of the Democratic Party all through the 90s, right? They gradually, when Clinton supported the welfare bill, they became, tried to be like Republicans. And apparently they were weak right up till 2006 because of that stigma, right? If, on the other hand, a new American ecological party, that's this guy in politics, were to try to make it on its own, such a movement on the left would generate its mirror opposite on the far right, and Lyndon LaRouche's thermonuclear fusionists would probably match the Greens vote for vote, with each party taking about 15% of the electorate. So he's saying the third party move won't work, right? It would be fair. Now, that doesn't stop Ralph Nader, and Ross Perot surfaces as a big factor in the in 92. So
I think it's interesting that he has confidence in LaRouche's movement, that he thinks that LaRouche could position himself strategically.
Yeah, well, he recognized the LaRouche movement. That's why I have him.
I don't think LaRouche could ever have positioned himself strategically under any circumstances.
Right, but this is in 85, 86, right when LaRouche is at his peak, the biggest peak he'd ever get. In the spring of 86, his some of his workers get positions in the Democratic primaries in Chicago, Illinois, I think. I remember this young man and woman, they got elected as candidates for the lieutenant general of the state, and they rode a tank down some major street. Okay, now their image was absurd, but they were building up post-depression, post-81-82 depression interest. They were getting lots of money funding the organization. And LaRouche appeared on Larry King, and he had a National Press Club conference all in 86 until he got busted in October 86. But Thompson is aware of what LaRouche is doing in 85-86 because LaRouche is critiquing the Cathedral St. John the Divine and the whole Lindisfarne group that Thompson represents.
But the fact that he's characterizing them as being thermonuclear fusionists is a bit wacky, because here it is, I don't know how many years later since he wrote this, and thermonuclear fusion is barely theoretically possible. I mean, the experiments that they're doing in that area are so puny that it's unrealistic to think.
Not in the hot fusion. This is not cold fusion. This is hot fusion.
This is hot fusion, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, as I'm saying, even in the arena of hot fusion, the experiments that they're doing are so puny that it's impractical to think that they could implement any technology in the next 20 years to using thermonuclear fusion.
Right, but you've heard that China and Europe are putting big bucks, and there's a big international coalition building a huge hot fusion reactor.
Mm-hmm.
Laboratory. The point is that that was what LaRouche was about. He ran a magazine called Fusion. He was all about promoting thermonuclear, and LaRouche would claim that if he got into the White House, he'd move us into rapid development of that.
Yeah,
crash program.
Right. The same way that Kennedy put us on the moon, LaRouche would have put us into nuclear fusion.
Yeah. So, but it is, Thompson is exactly correct to say that that's what LaRouche is about, thermonuclear fusionists. That's what his agenda was.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted more fusion reactors and newer hot fusion development. Cold fusion hadn't entered the scene yet.
The thing that scared people like Thompson, I'm sure, was that on the way to getting more, on the way to developing thermonuclear fusion energy, he wanted to increase fission, the thermonuclear fission facilities.
Yeah, that's right. He wanted to bring back the Three Mile Island and those places.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's technically correct to see that LaRouche was pro-nuclear energy versus the Greens and anti-nuclear energy.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, right then is the LaRouche would never be as powerful as he was in 85, 86 in terms of TV imagery. And remember, he had many broadcasts during the elections in 80 and 82 and 84 and 86. He was on TV a lot. He had a lot of money funding him.
Mm-hmm.
To the point that he might have... Thompson understood that if there was a Green Party, there would be a reaction.
Yeah.
It's natural. And LaRouche might have organized it. It would seem that he was smart enough, intelligent enough, and intellectual enough, and bookish enough for Thompson's standards to be an influential figure to this degree in the mid-80s.
Yeah.
Okay.
The reason why I bring it up, though, is for being far-fetched, is that I think it reflects on the fact that Thompson himself is a bit of an idealist, and maybe
yeah,
not
missing,
be.
Yeah, he's missing a lot of factors.
Yeah,
he's a POB, a print-oriented bastard. So he's thinking in bookish terms.
Mm-hmm.
Even though he presents his material orally in lectures, which you've heard and are very good.
Yeah,
but his mental framework is the printed book.
Right.
Which is what the New Age is. The New Age is a revitalization of the visual space effect of the book, though they're unconsciously. Dealing with that. They're not aware of that. Their values come out of the printed effect.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so...
the whole Earth catalog effect.
Yeah, or no, just the printed space. The Gnosticism is an effect of the phonetic alphabet and then later the printing press.
Mm-hmm.
Gnosticism was, well, the Rosicrucian version of intellectual Gnosticism was really big at the time of Francis Bacon. That's when the Royal Society of Royal Academy of Science in England was formed around Francis Yates, the scholar, has shown the New Age Gnostic underpinnings of the scientists of that era. That was the peak, the beginning of the printing press period, which is like 1500 to 1700.
Mm-hmm.
Because after that, you got the newspaper and then steam and a bit of industrial technology. Even though printing press becomes, it remains lingering as a powerful environment, right?
Mm-hmm.
Until the 21st century. Let's see. It would be, he says, it would be far better for the, he's saying, I want to say, so the third party, he doesn't see that there will be a strong third party, and that was the main charismatic point of the 92 election, was the Perot Revolution. He started a third party.
Yeah.
And supposedly did well, you know, in statistic terms. But there was going to be a third party anyways, because that would represent the decentralization, fractionalization of media and its effect in the political sphere, that you could get enough people detached from the centralized meme of regular mainstream Washington politics to create an active movement, which is what happened in 92. So he didn't foresee that either.
Mm-hmm.
It would be far better for the Democratic Party to take the best of the Ecological Party and the best of American Big Science, to move the new ethnic majority in defeat of the white suburban affluent constituency that supports Reagan. Paradoxically, it is this new Latin Asian America. Paradoxically, it is this new Latin and Asian America that's more truly expressive of the California culture that first put Reagan into power. California culture is the autonomous culture of the satellite effect of the 60s. So he's still thinking in terms of the TV body or the TV mass media analog situation. He's not seeing the digital two-way effect come in, which two-way effect leads to the third party and the fact that Latin and Asian American can get involved in the political process because it's not as centralized. Mm-hmm. And through the 90s, they became even more important. All right?
Mm-hmm.
He continues, I doubt if the Democratic Party will adopt Guyan politics in 1988. Most likely, we'll try to copy the Republicans with someone like Iacocca, and our politics will be the typical American cultural situation of Avis and Hertz, Pepsi and Coca-Cola, McDonald's versus Burger King. But history is full of surprises like Chernobyl, which happened in April 1986. So it just happened when he was writing this. But history is full of surprises like Chernobyl. No, he would have... this would indicate that he wrote this right at the time of Chernobyl, because it's published in 86. What is that? Winter 86. Oh, okay, it goes into 87. So this may be written in the middle and latter part of 1986. So definitely Chernobyl's happened. But history is full of surprises like Chernobyl, so I would imagine that by 1992, this awful generation of the 50s, and he's thinking of people like Ed Meese, these hideous reruns of the anti-intellectual McCarthy era. See, there's his anti-intellectual. He's still like the print guy, right? These guys are anti-books. America is a kinetic culture, McLuhan would say, and naturally, books aren't a prime medium in the American general consciousness. And the book person considers this kinetic bias anti-intellectual, or anti-book, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he's saying these hideous reruns of the anti-intellectual McCarthy era will have spent themselves. Just as the 60s introduced a quantum leap in consciousness for the whole human race, so will the 90s take us up one more step. Now, he's right there. Definitely the Internet took us another quantum leap, right?
Mm-hmm.
In terms of linear progression. There's all kinds of retrievals and chaos that the quantum leap retrieved, and we're in the middle of that now. But if you're thinking like a book person, linearly progressive evolution, the 90s will up the spiral, take us to a higher spiral. But he is he's predicting that, but he doesn't know, I think, it's going to be the Android meme. It won't take, and so then... And he's also aware that, you know, there's not a leader element. He's picking up on the TV effect that it's a group mind that will come in and a generational meme. So it won't take a national charismatic leader to affect such a cultural shift in the 90s. Of course, it's going to take a technology. But he's thinking in terms anthropomorphically of some kind of political anthropomorphic expression here of a group mind. It won't take a national charismatic leader to affect such a cultural shift, for by the 90s, the generation of the 60s will be spread throughout the establishment as corporate presidents, as politicians, as popular musicians and video artists, as university leaders. As they look around and see themselves in position, and they'll be doing that through media, they will remember, and those camp followers who now, in the middle 80s, who now celebrate their neoconservative orthodoxy, will change spots and drag out their old 60s credentials and begin to boast about how many demonstrations, love-ins, and rock festivals they took part in. Now, in the early 90s, that did happen. A lot of the Generation Xers got into a 60s revival, if you remember that,
mm-hmm.
in the pop culture. And not just in the old 60s guys, there was a whole... I mean, just the popularity of the Grateful Dead in the early 90s, that phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
And that also was part of the personal computer ethos, too. But he's talking about the baby boomers as shapeshifters or chameleons. They, as I show in my chart, they go through phases. There are beatniks in the late 50s, hippies in the 60s, the yuppies in the 70s and early 80s, and that can be, and then neocons or Reaganites or guppies, green yuppies, whatever is parallel to what he means by neoconservative. Basically, they become the decade. And so Reagan's image supposedly dominated. And so he's saying these very people who became Reaganites will become something different in the new environment of the 90s. And he thinks it'll be a kind of a nostalgia for their youth, since they're getting older. Once again, it will be fashionable to be idealistic and patriotic. Definitely Wired magazine wrote in on that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it was an Android Me. It was not in political terms. It was in celebration of technology and communication, which is what the baby boomers lived in all their lives, was a world of hyper-communication.
Mm-hmm.
So they celebrated the miniaturization and the globalization of communication with the Internet, and that's Wired magazine. Once again, it will be. I turned him onto Wired, Bill onto Wired magazine. He didn't even know about it.
Oh.
And that's, he was putting me down for bringing up McClune in the seminar, and I said, well, McClune's got a big revival. Where's that? I showed him Wired magazine, which was written by a lot of his friends from the 70s, like Stuart Brand and Kevin Kelly, people he knew in the 70s and 80s from the Whole Earth World. And remember, this is an article for the Whole Earth Review, but this is in 85. But in 93, I'm pointing out that McClune is on the masthead of the new revolutionary magazine, Wired. At least trend-wise speaking, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, once again, it would be fashionable to be idealistic and patriotic, not simply for Springsteen's USA, but the entire planet. But also for the this kind of digital body, too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Being idealistic for the chip body. Such is the fantasy of one who came of age in the 60s, speaking of himself, and such is my... Okay, so he's saying, such is the fantasy of one... the boomers who became of age in the 60s, and such is my fantasy of a new Guyan form of politics for the 90s. So let's go on to the next quote, which is from another magazine article. It's that Theosophical magazine, Theosophical Society, I think it's a spinoff from, it's called The Quest, Volume 4, Number 1, Spring 1991, and now he's calling it Culture, Chaos, and Planetary Transformation. So he's bringing in the chaos factor now.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't look so chaotic maybe in the mid-80s when he wrote the quote I just read. Now we're looking at something 5 or 6 years later. Culture, Chaos, and Planetary Transformation.
Yeah. When did Ralph Abrams start publishing on chaos theory?
He was writing in the 80s, but he puts a book out in the middle 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Called Chaos, Eros, and Gaia. Those three words, I don't know if it's in that order. But Ralph Abraham is a friend of Thompson, and Thompson starts promoting him in the middle 80s.
Mm-hmm.
So, and Abraham becomes a member of the Lindisfarne Institute, and Thompson says later he's indebted to understanding chaos dynamics through understanding Ralph Abraham's writings. In history of the changes in mathematics.
Yeah. If Thompson was ever able to really have at least a mathematical understanding. Thompson admits that he doesn't do math.
That's right. Well, it's like me talking about the analog and the digital. I know nothing about the technical parts of computers.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, a specialist would say that I don't know what I'm talking about. But you need a public expression for the general population of the patterns that are happening, and Thompson serves that role. He's popularizing Lovelock, Margulies, Abraham, and Francesco Varela. He's not an expert in any of their fields, but what he does, following McClune, is that he sees the common pattern, the underlying ground, conceptual ground, in all their different fields. And then he does a poetic oral dance with that. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So he makes a historical pattern or poem or epic manifesto out of the... out of general features implied in the specialist discipline of chaos mathematics.
Trying to look at the hidden ground in the same way that McClune did.
Right.
But he probably was never quite as comprehensive as understanding the hidden ground as McClune was.
Well, Thompson criticized McClune for concentrating too much on technology. Thompson called it a concretized, too much, I think the word was concretization or hyper-concretization. He criticized that. He criticized Terence McKenna for concretizing the role of drugs in a man's evolution. And because Thompson, emphasizing the singularity, which was made up of all kinds of factors, thought that he was more comprehensive than McClune and didn't just focus on technology. He would focus on what he called cultural ecology. On cultural content, and on angels, and on the subtle bodies. He thought he broadened the factors. So therefore, he wouldn't just refer to technology.
Yeah.
He would refer to the conceptual effects of technology as another part of the ground. And so his term was cultural ecology, not media ecology. So being a book guy, he emphasized cultural content. And most of his books review ideas and content through history, cultural concepts, and he tries to show the hidden ground that way. It's sort of the mirror procedure, mirror opposite of McLuhan.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, if McLuhan is more important to stress the actual physical effects, multi-level effects of technology, then Thompson failed on that way by his gambit into looking into ideas and
right.
cultural content.
Yeah. Well, when he gets into ideas and cultural content, he's getting more into the area of opinion. Marshall may have been trying to stay a little closer to the bone.
Right. Now, here's where Thompson, on another level, is more correct than McLuhan. Because by the time of 1970, or the period 67-72 that Thompson represents, which I have my chart crystallized around 1970, the media has converged. Content rules. Content is the ground. Even McLuhan understood that. Content is the ground. What is the White House going to say? Is the White House going to say the medium is the message and then develop social policy around that point? Well, not if Bucky Fuller had his say, or if LaRouche had his say. Whoever gets in the White House determines the word that makes the market and determines the whole direction of orientation and conceptualization in the global theater. And at that point, when the content is the ground, Thompson becomes a figure of that effect and starts analyzing cultural ecology or content ecology. You
know,
see the paradox?
Well, that's interesting. So you're saying that formal causality of technology becomes superseded by the content itself in terms... The content becomes the formal causality
yes.
at that point?
Yes, because everything is merged in the satellite convergence of the global theater of the 60s into one hologram.
Mm-hmm.
And the White House is the one that orchestrates the content of that hologram.
So we can't separate content
and
technology
form.
Anymore.
That's right. Now, McLuhan knew that, but he wasn't in a position to talk that way. That's why when Thompson's book came out in 1971, called At the Edge of History, people thought he was the new McLuhan, because he was actually riding. You talk about Clinton riding on the information highway. Thompson was riding on the McLuhan point that content was the new ground. And he writes about this in his book, Counterblast and Take Today. McLuhan talks about man being both figure and ground. There's no longer this dialectic of form and content or machines and man or technology and man. It is merged. And the best expression of that merger is McLuhan's use of Finnegan's Wake. But Thompson comes along.
This is where the meme becomes the new super technology, merging both content and technology.
There's the Android meme.
Yeah.
That's what I mean by Android meme. It's where content is the ground. But it is a mixture of technology and human perception.
We have to call it the Android meme. It seems like it's sufficient to call just the fact that these memes have become the new technological ground.
Well, I coined the term in the 90s because everybody was talking about the cyborg and the cyberpunk fad that Wired magazine represented, and a lot of the zines were into. And they were into pop culture and punk culture and cyberpunk culture were putting on being androids.
Mm-hmm.
And they would think in terms of android versions of their chemical body. So I wanted to show that the very point you just said is that the meme was the ground, ideas or content or the message, therefore to indicate that it was cyberized or technology coming alive idea, I made it Android meme. That was the purpose of the phrase, to point out that it was a meme that was not generated by humans.
Okay.
So it's a term that's meant to move someone from thinking they're being a robot.
But a meme is technology comes alive slightly doesn't capture the essence of the meme, because the meme, if it's technology, but it's meaning as well.
That's right.
And technology has no intrinsic meaning other than the meaning that it that is acquired by the content.
That's only 50% of the story. The other half is that technology is extensions of our senses, and doesn't matter what today means, I'm going to experience it.
Right.
It's as I go out and enjoy this, my senses, regardless of what it means. Meaning is an actual term that comes out of the Western literacy tradition.
But a meme, if we extract meaning from the equation, then a meme is an inappropriate term, because half of what makes a meme is the fact that it enfolds levels of meaning.
That's right. So you take McLuhan's phrase, global village. There's a contradiction. How can a village be global? So McLuhan had contradictory items right in a phrase, but the phrase communicated. I've got contradictory items in my phrase, Android meme. I must have a contradiction in the title. Neither half is subsumes the other, and both are necessary, and both mean something, but when you break it apart, it becomes more complex.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, so the meme is the cultural content that is a habit or a tradition or the meaning, but the technology continues upsetting that meme. And it takes on a life of its own, so you bring in the robotic automatic, and that's what's meant by Android. So that the kids in, say, the cyberpunk 90s were subjected to a meme of fashion that came out of wire culture or whatever they were into that they thought was something that they could identify with. It was a meme. It was an idea. Basically, said, "Hey, you're free. Take the zine meme. You know, zine, Z-I-N-E-S." The meme was